Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Plastic production has increased exponentially from about 2 million tons a year in 1950 to 450 million tons a year today, and there's no limit in sight. Every day, more than 4,300 garbage trucks worth of plastic waste ends up in our oceans, rivers, and lakes. That amounts to 3 garbage trucks every minute. Experts predict that by the year 2050, there will be more plastic in the oceans than fish. Think about all of the plastic you use in your life, or the plastic you see when you go to the store. Only 6% of that plastic is recycled. The rest of that plastic goes to landfills, it ends up incinerated, or in our environment. Plastics have been found blowing in the wind near the peak of Mount Everest, in the snow of Antarctica, in the ocean's deepest trenches, in placentas, breast milk, stool blood, lungs, and even in our brains. Plastic is now associated with a rise in diabetes, reproductive cancers, and cardiovascular disease. So how did we end up being so dominated by plastic? And what can we do about this crisis? In their new book, The Problem with Plastic, How We Can Save Ourselves and Our Planet Before It's Too Late, Judith Ank and Adam Mahoney detail plastic's life cycle and expose how our plastic pollution crisis is the result of a deeply rooted web of systemic and political failure, greed, and environmental racism. They write, "We are convinced that the only way to turn off the plastic tap is if we engage a substantial number of people at the grassroots level. We are outnumbered in state legislatures, governors' offices, and Congress. That political imbalance gets leveled out when ordinary people jump in and get engaged locally. This is the only way we can make change happen. There is a role for each of you to play." Judith Ank is senior fellow and faculty member in the Center for the Advancement of Public Action at Bennington College in Vermont. She's president of Beyond Plastics, an organization working to end plastic pollution everywhere. In 2009, Judith was appointed regional administrator of Region 2 of the Environmental Protection Agency by President Barack Obama. She was the longest serving EPA Region 2 administrator. Judith Ank is co-author of the new book, The Problem with Plastic, How We Can Save Ourselves and Our Planet Before It's Too Late. Hi, Judith. Thank you so much for your really incredible work. Congratulations on the new book that you wrote with Adam Mahoney, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my thanks are to you, Rose. Thanks for having me. And you have been reporting on this issue for a couple years now, so I'm glad we now have a book for you and your listeners to thumb through.
Well, congratulations on this new book. And I was thinking, Judith, we've had you on the show so many times, and we get right into all the details of plastic and plastic pollution, what we can do about it. I don't think we've spent that much time talking about your background. So we'd love to find out more about you. How did you come to dedicate your life to being such a tireless environmental and social justice activist? And how did you get involved in plastic pollution?
Well, this is when people should just pour themselves a large cup of coffee if you want to hear my life story. But it started when I was a college student. I actually grew up in the Catskill Mountains in a very wonderful but somewhat conservative family, oldest of 5 children. And I went off to college and found this organization that sounded really interesting to me, New York Public Interest Research Group, NYPIRG. And I did an internship with them in the state capitol in Albany, and I was assigned to work on the New York State Bottle Bill, the law that has a refundable deposit on beverage bottles and cans. So I've been a solid waste gal for a long time. I think waste issues just illustrate how unsustainable our society is. So my internship, I failed to pass the bill. Then I did it a second time, failed to pass the bill. And then when I graduated college, decided to stay in Albany and try it again. And the third time was the charm. So that was the first bill I ever worked on, got it through in about 3 years. And I've been hooked on working to protect the environment ever since. I've had positions both inside government, outside government. I guess my big transition was going into government. I worked for 8 years as the New York Attorney General's policy advisor. Then I served as Deputy Secretary for the Environment in the New York Governor's Office. And then, as you noted, one of the great real honors of my life was being selected by President Obama to work as the EPA Region 2 Regional Administrator at a time when EPA actually was committed to protecting public health and the environment. And it was during my time at EPA that I started looking more closely at the plastics issue, because it touched every issue that I've spent my whole career working on. It's so multifaceted. So it's an ocean issue. It's an environmental justice issue. It's a health issue. It's a climate change issue. It's a recycling failure. So I was drawn to the issue when I left government. It's not like I was getting a lot of job offers from the fossil fuel industry or the chemical industry. I had some nice job offers from green companies, but you know, who wants weekends off and a big salary? That's all overrated. So I was approached to teach at Bennington College. I had met the professors there from a drinking water crisis near Bennington, PFOA in the public water supply. And I was so impressed with how the professors worked to support the community. So I said to them, I am, you know, very interested in an affiliation with Bennington College. How about if I teach and see if I can launch this little feisty nonprofit project called Beyond Plastics? I don't know if it's going to work, but there's definitely an unmet need here. And Bennington College was very welcoming. They said yes. At the time, Beyond Plastics was one half of one staff person, which was me. We're now 19 staff, and wow, we are working our tails off on this plastics issue.
That's amazing. Congratulations on all of that incredible work, especially with Beyond Plastics. And this, it's such an interesting experience for you because you've seen so much change. While the plastic pollution crisis is getting worse, there is more information and education out there than ever.
Right. So one of the things I do as a college professor is I teach an online class on Zoom on plastic pollution, which, by the way, your listeners can audit. It's once a semester, just 7 weeks on Wednesday evenings. It's a great class because I have undergraduate college and high school students, and then I have community people that audit the class for $100, a bargain. So, and that goes to Bennington College. So, when I started teaching the class, I really wanted to do a deep dive on plastics and health. And I mostly could find information about the negative health impacts for communities living near plastic production facilities. So, Rose, you and I have spoken about Cancer Alley in Louisiana, where there's a concentration of petrochemical facilities between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. And unfortunately, Johns Hopkins recently did a study finding the cancer rates in Cancer Alley's 7 times higher than national average, which just is so unacceptable and awful. So I could find that kind of information in Louisiana, Texas, a little bit in Appalachia. What I couldn't find 5-6 years ago was what was plastics doing to our health if we didn't live in a community near plastics manufacturing. Since then, we have major studies, peer-reviewed scientific published studies identifying microplastics in the human bloodstream, our lungs, our kidneys, our heart arteries, and doctors and medical researchers looked at the presence of microplastics that attached to plaque in heart arteries, and unfortunately found an increased risk of premature death, stroke, and heart disease. In the past year, we've seen a study looking at microplastics in the human brain because they have passed the blood-brain barrier and contributes to increased risk of Alzheimer's disease and neurological diseases. I should add, microplastics are 5 millimeters or less, the size of a grain of sand. And then microplastics have been found in human testicles, in the human placenta, both the fetal side and the maternal side. So the fetus is just there for 7, 8, 9 months and is already exposed to microplastics. And then microplastics have been found in breast milk. So this is a growing problem. It's not new. What is new is we finally have solid science showing that we are breathing in and swallowing large amounts of microplastics in our own bodies. Some of it we excrete, but not all of it. And it's not just the problem of the physicality of the little tiny shard of microplastic in our body as a foreign object, but also 16,000 different chemicals are used to make plastic. And those chemicals sometimes hitchhike on the microplastics that are entering our bodies.
And just to add one more piece of information, in the section of your book called Poisoned by Plastic, you write, scientists are still in the early stages of the research, but essentially studies show that when cells and organs come into contact with microplastics, they begin to falter. Cells become irritated and stressed, impairing their ability to detoxify or repair damage. Mitochondria, the cell's powerhouses that sustain its function and survival, start to malfunction. And as a result, cell death is not uncommon. And Judith, one of the things that we want to really focus on this whole hour is the solutions, because this has been a rough year. It's been a very dark year on so many levels. And we're tired. We know that our listeners are tired. And we really want to focus on the solutions. And you write, as we emphasize throughout this book, the most powerful change comes from pushing for government regulation on plastics. You've always done such an amazing job, as you do in this book, of exposing the whole recycling campaign, that the industry did this to make us feel good about recycling. Recycling does not work. And so, as you say, the only solution here is government regulation.
Right. I this is a fixable problem. 50% of all plastics ever produced have been produced in the last 18 years. I remember the last 18 years. And the reason we have so much plastic in our lives, it's not because we voted for more plastic. It's not because we think things taste better in plastic. It's because there's a glut of fracked gas on the market, and the fossil fuel industry and the chemical industry is using a waste product from hydrofracking to make new plastic, pre-production plastic pellets. So we have an opportunity to change things. There are alternatives to plastic. We don't need a space age breakthrough, although I love mycelium, mushroom-based plastic. Hemp is certainly an alternative to plastic. There's some innovation with seaweed. All of those things need to scale up. But we have tried and true paper, cardboard, metal, glass. All of those things can be made from recycled material. And when you put them in a recycling bin, unlike plastics in the Bay Area, rest assured, most of that is getting recycled. But even more important is waste reduction and building that reuse and refill economy. People who are ordering things online for the holidays, you are likely receiving things that are packaged in 2, 3, 4 layers of packaging when one would have been enough. So reduction is important, particularly with packaging, but also having commercial bottle washing operations so we can have refillable glass bottles. San Francisco led the way. I remember reading that the San Francisco airport installed water refill stations. So you can bring your metal water bottle to the airport and get it refilled. And then they went a step further. They banned the sale of plastic water bottles and then plastic beverage bottles altogether. So that airport is a model for the country, but we need to get those water refill stations and water fountains in train stations and bus stations, not just airports. Many of our children are going to school and eating breakfast and lunch off of plastic plates and plastic utensils. How about spending some money installing dishwashing equipment and real dishes? You know, those are the examples of refill and reuse that are even more urgent than better recycling.
I'm really glad you brought up the consumption issue, because for some reason that just doesn't get talked about much anymore. COVID changed a lot when it comes to people's buying habits. People are now buying toilet paper and paper towels and things that they used to get at the store. They're now buying that online.
Yes.
And I don't know why we don't talk about this more. When you look at the number of people who have the one-day shipping through Amazon, I mean, it's almost half the country. These are crazy numbers. So can you talk to people about, I think some of us just kind of do it because it's convenient and we don't think about what's involved in that purchase. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So you and I are probably the last people in the world walking around worrying about overconsumption from online purchases, because since COVID, it's so ingrained. But for instance, I urge everyone to buy the book from their local independent bookstore, not from Amazon, where, by the way, we were selected as one of the top 9 nonfiction books for the month of December. So thank you, Amazon. They probably didn't read the book, but go buy the book at your local bookstore and buy an extra one for your library. So there's, you know, there's just the greenhouse gas impacts of delivering all of these products to people's homes. I often think when I'm at someone's home, including my own, your garbage can is now on wheels. We generate so much waste and even recyclables on wheels. But I just want to share a few statistics which really drive this home and is important, particularly from a climate change perspective. Here in the United States, we have 4% of the world's population, and yet we use 16% of the world's energy. The United States produces 12% of the world's solid waste and about 17% of the world's plastic waste, a lot of that exported to other countries. So this just is not sustainable. We're the world's largest oil producer, accounting for a fifth of global production. And just to touch on the energy issue, I remember when elected officials in Washington said we need to be energy independent, which makes me very excited about solar and wind and geothermal and small scale hydro. That should be part of the energy independence agenda. But now what we're hearing from the Trump administration is their official policy is energy dominance, and they want to export large amounts of liquefied natural gas and other fossil fuels to other countries. All of that has an enormous impact in the communities where things are extracted. And then from a climate change perspective, worldwide, when all of the fossil fuel is burned. So we are, you know, we are on a collision course on the climate crisis. And also closer to home, where do you put all of this waste? You know, California has one of the largest underground fires at a landfill in Southern California. And if you've got plastic in your landfill, you're even more at risk, because plastic burns fast and it burns hot. And it is complicit in the creation of underground and above ground landfill fires.
Can you tell us more about this, Judith? Because I was wondering when reading your book, I was wondering, where does all this stuff go? Because as you write, and we're going to talk about why only 5 to 6% of plastic is actually recycled. You write, in 2018, the most recent year for which data is available, about 36 million tons of plastic waste were generated in the U.S. Only 3 million were actually recycled, while the vast majority, 27 million tons, ended up in landfills. And I was thinking, where is this all going? So right. I've never heard of this underground landfill fire in California. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so it is, the landfill is run by a company, I believe, called Waste Connections. It's been on fire for a couple years. It's near a residential neighborhood, and they can't get it out. I mean, I dealt with a smaller underground fire when I served at the EPA during the Obama administration. And, you know, you think about landfills, it's just a giant hole in the ground. If it's compliant with regulations, it'll have a plastic liner at the bottom, so it's not supposed to contaminate groundwater. And then something called a leachate collection system, where it collects all the rain, and so that doesn't go into groundwater. But basically, a landfill is just a big hole in the ground where they bury trash of all kinds. And then every day they cover it with soil. And then the next thing happens the next day. And some of these landfills are huge. And sometimes they catch on fire. And when it's an underground fire, it's really hard to put it out. The one I worked on was on fire for many, many months in an obscure rural community. And I didn't know about it until the congresswoman at the time called me. And her name was Kathy Hochul, who's now the governor of New York. And the state agency never told me about it at EPA. I called them and I said, you know, we have standby contractors who can handle this. And we got it out in the course of just a few weeks. But this California landfill fire is huge, and it's been burning for years, and it's affecting air quality. You know, this is what happens when you're in a throwaway society. It's not inevitable. It's just a clarion call to be creating less waste, in particular, less plastic waste.
Inside Climate News has an important piece about this. And so this underground fire at this landfill is right next to Six Flags Magic Mountain, right near Santa Clarita. And the people who live near there, one woman said she bought a home and the real estate agent didn't tell her about this. And people are testifying about nosebleeds, nonstop coughing, asthma, vomiting, tremors, dizziness, miscarriages, cancer. A father from the historically black town of Valverde said one night the smell and his family's coughing were so bad, they drove to Walmart to sleep in the parking lot.
Wow.
I mean, this is like a sci-fi bad movie. And, you know, this is so important, Judith, because the other thing we so appreciate about your work is you write about how so much of this really affects frontline communities of color and low-income communities. In fact, you open your book by writing, it's almost like you dedicate your book to the people most affected. By design, low-income people and communities of color bear the burden of plastics. The destructive web of plastics gathers in their neighborhoods, river, air, and bodies. We dedicate this book to those living in the shadow of plastic facilities in Louisiana, Texas, Appalachia, and elsewhere, in the sincere belief that they should live in a world beyond plastics, and that such a world is within our reach.
That in fact is the dedication to the book, and what really has drawn me to this issue. It's the production of plastic, which is so negative for people living near plastic production facilities. Then there's the use of plastic, and we have to face reality. We cannot shop our way out of the problem, although you certainly want to do everything you can to reduce your exposure to plastic, especially food and beverage packaging. And then there's the disposal, which is things like underground landfill fires or living near garbage incinerators, which are a major source of air pollution and greenhouse gases. And then if the plastic does not go to your local garbage incinerator or landfill, and remember, the plastic recycling rate is only 5 to 6%. So most of your plastics are not getting recycled. They're either going to an incinerator, a landfill. Thankfully, most are not on fire, but this one in California is, and others around the country are. Some of it is exported to other countries where they are not equipped to handle all the plastic. So there's something called the plastic waste trade. There's a wonderful group based in the Bay Area called Basel Action Network. You should go to ban.org. They have documented the export of plastic to the Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia. For some reason, a lot is getting exported to Turkey. And most of that doesn't get recycled. It just gets open burned. And then if it's not exported, a huge amount of plastic gets loose in our environment. And then, so for instance, let's say you're walking down the street and a plastic sandwich wrapper gets away from you, or a plastic water bottle, or a plastic bag. It gets away from you, you don't pick it up, it rains, it gets into storm sewers, which brings the plastic to local streams or rivers, and we know all rivers empty into the ocean. If it gets out into the ocean, it's exposed to sunlight, so it gets brittle. And then the wave action in the ocean serves almost like a paper cutter. So one plastic water bottle becomes hundreds of little pieces of plastic. On many levels, the microplastics are a greater risk than the large pieces known as macroplastics. And then most of the plastic, some people have seen photographs of these giant plastic islands out in the ocean called gyres, G-Y-R-E-S. But in fact, most of the plastic falls to the sea floor and in smaller pieces. And then it is eaten by fish, sea turtles, seabirds. And you have a massive amount of plastic building up in the marine environment. We are turning our ocean into a watery landfill. And every piece of plastic in the ocean does, and on land, does not degrade. It just, a piece of plastic will break into a smaller piece of plastic. So this is quite serious. And the plastics issue, in my view, has not gotten enough public attention, but the scientists are saving the day. The scientists are doing research and publishing new information almost every month. I worry about the massive cuts in funding for federal research, particularly on anything related to the environment. So at least for the next few years, we will be relying on research from other countries. Wow. And from colleges, if they can get the funding to do the research.
Well, thank you for telling us about the Basel Action Network. I think we've had them on, but it's been a long time. We should definitely bring them on in the new year. And Judith, they just came out with a new report about California being caught violating, yes, foreign country laws banning mixed paper plastic waste imports. So they're so good because they're putting these AirTag trackers on plastic, and they're finding that California's plastic waste is being exported in paper bales and is winding up being dumped near paper mills in Asian countries or burned for fuel. And they have a photo of an Amazon Prime bag. And I've seen this before at Costco. It's a Disney bag selling organic apples. They found that next to a pulp and paper mill in East Java, Indonesia, came directly from California.
Wow. Yeah, Jim Puckett at Basel Action Network does amazing work worldwide. And what he did, your listeners could also do. You know, some people buy Apple trackers and they put it on their luggage in case your luggage gets lost or your pet collar. maybe your kid, but you can buy an Apple tracker or some other tracker, and why don't you affix it to some of your plastic that your local government tells you to put in your recycling bin and follow where it goes? You know, you will be surprised. There's a very good chance it'll show up at a waste transfer station and just ping for weeks or months at a time. And there's been documentation of so-called recycled plastic going to incinerators, landfills, export. We now have the ability to track where this goes. And boys and girls, you can do this at home.
Incredible. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we're joined by Judith Enck, Senior Fellow and faculty member in the Center for the Advancement of Public Action at Bennington College in Vermont. She's the president of Beyond Plastics. They work to end plastic pollution everywhere. In 2009, Judith was appointed Regional Administrator of Region 2 of the Environmental Protection Agency under President Obama. She's co-author of the new book, The Problem with Plastic, How We Can Save Ourselves and Our Planet Before It's Too Late. And Judith talked about the online course that she teaches about plastic pollution, and that is running from February 18th to April 1st. You can take this course and audit it for $100. Judith is also doing so many book talks across the country. You can find out if she's coming to your area, beyondplastics.org. If you are in the Bay Area, she will be at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco on February 19th at 5:30 p.m., and we will definitely have her back on the show when she's in the area. If you have a question or a comment for Judith Enck about plastic pollution, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, at a time when so many people, half of Americans, say they find groceries, utility bills, healthcare, housing, and transportation difficult to afford, we will share resources available to help people and families meet their basic needs this holiday season and beyond. That's tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation with Judith Enck, co-author of the new book, The Problem with Plastic, How We Can Save Ourselves and Our Planet Before It's Too Late, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Judith, we've been talking about the fact that only 5 to 6% of plastic is actually recycled. So let's talk about why this is the case. And it's important to remember, as you point out in your book, more than 16,000 chemicals are used in plastic products to give it qualities like flexibility. And that's one of the reasons why it's so hard to recycle all of this. But can you explain that? Why is the number so low? Judith, are you with us? You might be muted. Did Judith drop off? Well. Okay, well, we'll connect with Judith. I'll see what's going on behind the scenes. Are you there, Judith?
Yes. Can you hear
me? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem.
So let me say we should keep recycling our paper, metal, cardboard, and glass. And certainly compost your yard waste and your food waste. I am a big supporter of recycling. I started my town's recycling program many years ago. However, plastic recycling has been an abysmal failure, and let me explain why. Different colors are used to make plastic. As you mentioned, Rose, 16,000 different chemical additives. And then there are different types of plastic polymers. PET, HDPE, etc. So you want to look at the bottom of the plastic container. If it's number one or number two, you should put that in your recycling bin. You might have a fighting chance of that getting recycled. But the reality is most plastics don't get recycled. And the best way for me to explain this is, let's say in your home, your apartment, you've got a bright orange hard plastic detergent bottle when you do your laundry. And then in your refrigerator, you have a black plastic takeout container. And then you've got some plastic film packaging from a hardware store where you just purchased something. None of those plastics can be recycled together. They're all different colors. They're all different polymers. They're all different chemical concoctions. And so you cannot, it's not like when you recycle an aluminum can, you recycle that into a new aluminum can. You cannot recycle most plastics because you would have to do hundreds, if not thousands, of sorts. They'd have to be the same color, the same plastic polymer, the same chemical combination. So the people who know this, that plastics recycling by design doesn't work, are the companies that make plastic. And in the United States, the largest plastic producer is ExxonMobil. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting that your attorney general in California, Rob Bonta, has sued ExxonMobil for being deceptive about plastics recycling and their newest false solution called chemical recycling. Attorney General Bonta sued ExxonMobil in September of 2024. ExxonMobil tried to get the case dismissed and failed. They're now trying to get it moved from state court to federal court. And I am very confident that Bonta is going to win this lawsuit because it's all about math. You look at the multi-million dollar advertising by the plastics industry saying, don't worry about all your plastics, just put it in your recycling bin. And then the attorney general can depose the Los Angeles County recycling coordinator and ask, how much polystyrene plastic have you actually recycled? And the recycling coordinators are very good at keeping track of numbers, and they'll probably say less than 1%. Then you depose the San Diego recycling coordinator. How many plastic bags have you recycled? And they very likely will say less than 1%. And so this really is a case about math. And ExxonMobil will try to slow it down in the courts. But in the end, Attorney General Bonta very likely will win. And he's doing a tremendous public service by bringing this case.
I would love for you to talk about the other corporations that are the biggest plastic polluters. But before we do that, given that we're not going to get, it's actually just going to get worse under the Trump administration. So you've got to look to states for solutions. California is such an interesting case study because you have California Attorney General Rob Bonta suing Exxon. And then we have in January, I'm reading from ABC 10, starting January 1st, 2026, plastic bags at California retail stores will no longer be available. All plastic bags will be banned under a new state law aimed at closing loopholes in the state's longstanding restrictions on single-use plastics. Okay, so those are two wins. But then, Judith, at the same time, we learn from the Basel Action Network that California is sending so much of its plastic overseas to countries that can't deal with it. And then there's that landfill that's burning underground. And according to Inside Climate News, local residents' pleas for help from state officials remain unanswered. So California is a very interesting case study when it comes to plastic.
It is, and it's not great. California has the national reputation of being a real leader on environmental and waste issues. But the more I learn about California environmental policy on waste, the worse it looks. There's the export of plastics, including to Mexico, very poor regulation with this landfill fire. I'm very happy that the plastic bag ban is being enforced starting in January. But the history of this is California passed legislation on plastic bags 10 years ago, but they really messed it up. They only banned thin film plastic bags, and the result for many retailers was to then sell thicker plastic bags, making the status quo worse. And it took California 10 years to fix their plastic bag ban. I'm happy that it's finally getting fixed and now it needs to be enforced. The other thing I would add is California just recently banned polystyrene foam from being sold and used in the state. But yet there's a huge amount of polystyrene still being sold in stores. Beyond Plastics has done some activism around this. We have a wonderful new staff person, Susan Keefe, in Southern California, and she's been literally going store to store documenting all these retail stores that are violating the law and then reporting that to Cal Recycle, which everyone should do. There's another law called, which I love, called Skip the Stuff. You know, when you order takeout food and you say, no utensils, please. You know, we all have a kitchen drawer with overflowing plastic utensils and napkins. And you affirmatively say you don't want all that stuff, but you still get it because restaurant workers are super busy. Well, under Skip the Stuff, the default is you do not get the utensils, the napkins, the straws, the extra condiment. I just experienced this very recently. I was in Brooklyn and got takeout food with my family, and we walked to the restaurant. We're carrying it home, and I'm like, oh, darn, I forgot to mention no utensils. We get home, there's nothing in the bag, just the food. Mm. And I was like, oh, right, New York City has a Skip the Stuff law. This is actually working and saving restaurants money. However, in California, the way the legislature adopted it, it's up to the local government to then enforce. And we're finding in Southern California that most of the local governments don't even know about it. So there's a lot of work to be done, and there's not enough time to talk about the incredible loopholes in the California packaging bill, extended producer responsibility. That's like a whole show. But I appreciate, you know, people working on these issues, but we need a whole lot more people in the arena to make sure that when these laws are adopted by the California legislature, that they have an enforcement provision and have teeth.
And Judith, can we talk more about the companies? Because I feel that we often talk about the climate crisis, and the media is constantly now saying human-caused climate change, when we should really talk about these companies that are enabling this and just making it worse. So with plastic pollution, you mentioned Exxon. I was just curious about, I always look at the CEO pay because I'm always curious about that. So ExxonMobil CEO Darren Woods, according to Reuters, his compensation rose almost 20% last year. He's bringing in $44 million a year.
Wow.
So there's Exxon. Can you tell us some of the other major companies that are...
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Imagine getting paid that amount of money to almost causing the end of civilization with climate change. So the thing about plastics is it's fossil fuel companies. So it's ExxonMobil, it's Shell, it's Chevron, and then it's chemical companies. So it's Dow and DuPont. And then it's consumer brand companies like Amazon, McDonald's. Kraft Food is often leading the charge in state legislatures against comprehensive packaging reduction. General Mills, Coke, and Pepsi play a terrible outsized role. They are really addicted to plastic. So, you know, it's names that you are familiar with. It's also Starbucks. They currently say you can put their cups in a recycling bin in their store and they theoretically get recycled. Not so sure about that. And then there are supermarket chains. The one that drives me nuts is Trader Joe's because they have a lot of stuff that I like. But when I lived near a Trader Joe's in New York City, I would have to make an extra stop for fruits and vegetables because so much of their fruit and vegetables are overpackaged in plastic. And so I just wouldn't buy it. Shopping in Brooklyn takes like the entire day because you avoid the Trader Joe's produce. And you've just, it's really time consuming and almost impossible to avoid plastic, but the supermarkets could be doing a much better job. You know, one option is to shop at a food co-op, and many of them allow you to bring your own jars and you can buy bulk. So, you weigh the jar, you buy the product, and you can bring it back over and over again.
I always wondered about Trader Joe's. Why aren't they doing a better job? In fact, you all gave Trader Joe's on your retailer report card an F. Trader Joe's flunked Toxic Free Futures' latest retail ratings, receiving a big red F for their inaction on the many toxic chemicals and harmful plastics in their products and packaging. I'm noticing that they are putting out more fruits and veggies and selling them on a single basis. Mm-hmm. And then they've got some apples in what looks like a cardboard box rather than plastic. But why is it taking Trader Joe's so long to get rid of the plastic that they just don't need?
Yeah, they should get the Pokey Award. They are so slow. We had volunteers from Beyond Plastics Greater Boston appear at their corporate headquarters in Boston a few years ago with a Death by Plastic march. And Trader Joe's was none too happy that they were there, but never really had an answer why they're so addicted to plastics. And, I think Trader Joe's customers are looking for better options. We need choices when we go to supermarkets, and places like Trader Joe's and Whole Foods just don't give you those options.
Today, we're speaking with Judith Ank about her new book, The Problem with Plastic, How We Can Save Ourselves and Our Planet Before It's Too Late. We have a number of emails. Let me just read a few and then we'd love for you to respond. Ruby writes, "This year we got rid of our plastic containers for storage. I bought heavy glass containers with silicone lids. Please tell me they're okay. Good news, no more styrofoam is being used as filler, right? I've only seen it once in the last few years." Another listener writes, "I've often wondered about the plastics used in the ubiquitous mailing pieces. Doesn't this make paper also a kind of plastic? Is it avoidable?" And then another listener says, "Can you please end the show with some solutions?"
Let's start with the solutions. There are many, and you heard some of them here. Replacing, particularly for food, replace your storage containers with glass. It's the perfect holiday gift. My go-to wedding gift these days is Pyrex, so people can avoid plastic food storage, and certainly do not put plastic in the microwave. But if you look for it, you can find alternatives to plastic. You can get rid of plastics in your own kitchen, particularly things that you use a lot. So if you're a heavy coffee drinker, you want to avoid those plastic pods, the K-cups, and shift to something like French press or pour over so you don't have much plastic exposure. Look at your own home. In the book, we have a checklist, and you can follow the checklist, see what you can toss and see what you can substitute. And then, climb the civic ladder. Then look at your kid or your grandkid's school. Then look at your faith community, your church, your mosque, your synagogue. And then before you know it, you're at a city council meeting asking city council members, what can we do with government procurement? Could we not use our tax dollars to purchase so much plastic? Can we install more water fountains in public places and parks? And then you get, you find an environmental group to work with at the state level. There are a lot of great groups in California. One that I love is called Story of Stuff, and they have made the most amazing movie called Story of Plastic. It won an Emmy, looking at this issue of the plastic waste trade and also environmental justice. So the good news is there are things you can do in your own home, but what's even more important is getting into the political arena and getting your elected officials to pay attention to this issue. I firmly believe that in a couple years, lawmakers and regulators are going to look at this building data on plastics and health. And my goodness, there's plastics in our brains and our heart arteries. They're going to look back and say, why didn't we do more? And this is an instance where when the people lead, the leaders will follow. That's why we wrote the book. And Rose, thanks for mentioning that I'll be at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco on February 19th. It is free to students. There is an admission fee, $22, $50 with the book. I'll sign books afterwards. But I mostly want people to know that students can come for free. And I'm not putting this all on the shoulders of young people, but we need more students involved on this issue.
Hmm. And just quickly, Judith, we're getting a few questions about those silicone lids on glass containers. Are those okay?
Maybe. We are still researching this. I get this question a lot, and we've taken a close look at it, and we're just not sure.
Huh. Is it best to put the lid on after the food cools down?
Yes, that's
rather
good.
Than when it's hot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And the other thing is it's often not directly touching the food. So right. the glass is most important.
And just quickly, we're almost out of time, but Carol just wrote in, and thank you for this. Carol says, how ironic. Just as I'm listening to your excellent show about plastics, an article pops up in my feed about a fire at a recycling facility in Santa Clara County. And I'm just reading from SF Gate. This is just now happening. Fire crews are responding to a fire at a recycling facility where a shelter-in-place warning has been issued. Fire officials believe the blaze was sparked when a recycling load caught fire. So this is just happening more and more, Judith. We have about 20 seconds left.
Yeah, yeah. And plastics burn fast and hot. And I'm not saying that's the only cause here, but it certainly illustrates why we need to make less waste.
Judith Ank is president of Beyond Plastics. They work to end plastic pollution everywhere. She's co-author of the new book, The Problem with Plastic, How We Can Save Ourselves and Our Planet Before It's Too Late. Be sure to check out the class that she is teaching that anyone can attend for $100 to audit. You can find out more about her book tour also, beyondplastics.org. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us, Judith.
My pleasure. Thanks, Rose.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.